You're listening to Data Driven Performance, presented by UVic Formula Racing.
All right, getting started. We're joined again with Zach and Charlie, but Nigel has come to the aid of us for this one as a post-comp like breakdown of what happened, what our feelings were. Did we have feelings? Maybe not. So for those of you that haven't seen or listened to the first episode that we did with Zach and Charlie, Zach is our vehicle dynamics lead. It's lots of math and lots of figuring out how suspension works. All sorts of stuff that I don't totally understand. Charlie is our chief engineer for the electric vehicle development program. He's basically in charge of making sure that our electric car actually happens, which is no small feat. And Nigel is the chief engineer for the combustion side of things, but I'll let Nigel introduce himself if he wants.
Sure thing. Thank you, Blake. I'm currently the chief engineer for the combustion team, as Blake stated. I kind of do the same thing as Charlie does on the other side of things, but my job's a lot easier because we have an established team. I've been with the UVic Formula team for about almost 5 years now. I joined in 2016, and I'm actually pretty close to graduation here, but spent a year or two as a general member. I graduated to be the vehicle dynamic lead before Zach. And yeah, spent the last year here as a chief engineer. So thanks for having me on.
So what we're going to, I think we'll start with getting Charlie's thoughts, seeing as he's never actually done an in-person competition. Did you do the online competition last year?
This is my first time. So, I mean, it was obviously different than what a regular in-person competition would be, but I could definitely reflect on the experiences with this one, which was very different. I think having talked to people since competition, I perhaps am getting the impression that my experience was a lot more laid back than some other people's experiences. I don't know if that had to do with the fact that we made it sort of clear when we went in that, you know, a lot of what we're talking about hasn't actually been made yet. And we're at the stage where we're hoping, you know, you can give us feedback on whether we're on the right track or we're completely out to lunch. Something I kind of alluded to last episode was we've picked a kind of extreme design. We've gone in particular for our battery pack. It's really, really skinny, really tall, so high voltage. And then each cell is drawing a lot of current through it, which should give us a lot of benefits, but it presents a whole bunch of very specific engineering challenges. So that was a part of me that was going into the whole experience thinking that they might just tell us we're completely out to lunch and this isn't going to work and don't waste your money trying to construct it. That was not the experience. They did seem to, you know, agree with our reasoning behind the choices that we made, which was great, great validation. And they gave us some really good tips as to things to watch out for, things that could maybe simplify some of the bigger challenges we're facing because of our choices. Overall, I found it a really rewarding experience in that sense. We definitely didn't get torn down quite as much as I was maybe expecting we would. Certainly as much as maybe other people did. In general, they gave us a lot of good feedback and I was pretty happy with the information we came out of it with.
Yeah, I was really curious to get your perspective because I think Nigel and I probably are a bit tainted. Like we've done probably too many of these, if we're honest. So we've got a lot of like preconceived ideas of what design is. And then going into a virtual design event, because it's a bit different, we're kind of like, do you have that comparison? Whereas you can kind of look at it a little bit more objectively. How about we go with Zach? What are your thoughts, impressions, feelings?
Yeah. In general, I found that virtual comp this year was a lot closer to, just the overall experience was a lot more comparable to my vague recollections of in-person comp compared to last year. And that last year, it really felt more like just a presentation to which, you know, you had a design judge kind of nodding along to everything. This year was a lot more of kind of a conversation between the design judge and then Nigel and myself. Yeah, I think I got a lot more useful information out of it, both in terms of, you know, kind of thinking through the questions they were asking, like afterwards, you know, how could, you know, I respond better to that sort of question. And then also, he kind of touched on some more areas for further development. Like we had about 5 minutes or so at the end there, probably close to 3 minutes, where he went over some of the stuff that he thinks we should really have ready for next year. And yeah, it's a lot of stuff like, you know, try to quantify our compliances and everything and how that affects our suspension, all that kind of stuff. Like I feel essentially that I just got a lot more useful information out of this year than in the 2020 virtual comp. So yeah, no real complaints there. And then I also feel like I have a much better idea of kind of where I need to focus on for my presentation and, like, you know, general kind of materials for competition 2022 than I did prior to, like, this competition.
Sounds good. So if I'm, you know, getting this overall good, much better than last year.
Yeah, that is an extremely low bar, but yeah.
Yeah, to be fair to them, last year was kind of a disaster because of the fact that it was supposed to be in May, and that was kind of like peak what the hell's going on now situation.
Yeah,
so we'll be generous and say it was, you know.
There were also some fantastic memes that came out of that.
But that's the thing. I heard so much about the competition last year that I mentally had prepared myself for, like, an experience that wasn't going to be worth a lot of time and just a lot of stress. And I guess that was the saving grace, as I'd set the bar there and, like, actually went in and got a lot of feedback. And, you know, it definitely didn't seem as stressful as I needed to or as thought it was going to be.
Last year you could tell it was very, we've got to slap this together pretty quickly. And yeah, I don't think you're ever really expecting the end product to be that good when you're pivoting that hard that quickly. Nigel, do you have any finishing thoughts and feelings on this year's competition?
Well, you know, I got lots of thoughts and feelings. I definitely would echo kind of what Zach was saying, having been in the same room. It was very, very different experience from last year. Like you kind of said, last year is like you're presenting your design report to your parents and they're just kind of like nodding along and going, okay, yeah. Didn't really have much. Oh yeah, that sounds good. You guys are doing a good job. Until we got to the one thing, I guess the guy was a little bit more knowledgeable about. We kind of talked about some of the frequencies and like testing that weird like comparison of a vertical dynamics simulation we had and some test data that we had, and he asked a couple questions about discrepancies and similarities we saw there, which was useful. But outside of that, it was kind of something that was pretty disappointing because you put a lot of time and effort into getting ready for it, and it's also costs a lot of money for the team to go to, and to come out of it without much to show for it or areas to work on is always tough. But yeah, like Zach said, this year is a lot better in that sense. The guy did ask some fairly challenging questions to us, and I think Zach and I generally handled it fairly well. Like there were some questions that I think he asked that we didn't necessarily know the answer to, like off the top of our head, but he was good at kind of asking the right questions to lead us towards thinking about it in a way that got us to the answer. So
yeah,
that was definitely a valuable exercise to go through. I felt that we got to go through quite a bit of material as well, because as soon as he kind of heard what he wanted to hear, like he would just kind of stop you and move on to the next thing. So there's a lot more opportunity to dig into the details and get to those points that are, so he's able to give us proper feedback. So that was good to see. It was interesting, and I'm definitely glad we went through it as a team. I think especially as like a first year electric team, it provided a lot of opportunity to give us more insight into some of the things we don't know about, and also validate some of the things that we've done so far and maybe haven't been able to build yet, but like, I think it did give us a lot more confidence as well moving forward with what we built and designed up to this point.
Yeah, I feel like there was a lot of opportunity, at least on our end. I don't know if it was because of the judge we got or because of how clear we made it about our situation being the power team, train team on the EV. But I felt like there was a lot of opportunity to direct the conversation for us, to, you know, ask them what they thought about these design choices. And I don't know if, again, if that was by design or it was just because of the way I came at it. It was like, look, I just want to talk about this. Can you tell us what you think? But it was good. I enjoyed that. Is this the right place to get technical, like very slightly?
Yeah, go for it.
But like, yeah, one of the huge challenges with the battery design is every cell has to individually have fusible links to prevent basically feedback loops and thermal runaway of individual cells if they short. And because of our really high current demands through each individual cell, we're looking at fusible links of about 110 amps, which is huge. Like, we're basically just talking about a bus bar that like will melt if you pass 110 amps for it. So like trying to find appropriate fuses has been really, really challenging. And we're still at the point now where we're thinking of just testing our own made of nickel. To get nickel to carry 110 amps with the thickness that we're looking at, you would need such a wide strip that it almost just doesn't make sense with our geometry. The judges have basically made it clear that we can get away with a much smaller main fuse out the accumulator, which changes the constraints of all these smaller fuses because they allow for a slow blow time on the fuse. So we're mostly, like our planned maximum current out of the accumulator is about 180 amps. But we're mostly like 90% of the time going to be well below that in regular operating conditions. So because of that, we can actually go for a fuse that's maybe 150 amps, which is much easier, reduces the constraints down the line. And then just have an understanding that if we're above 150 amps for like 5 seconds, then it blows. But we can still get that peak power for when we're accelerating really quickly. So anyway, like things like that, which they don't show up in the rules. It's not stuff that you can clearly understand as an option until you've actually talked to the guys who are going to be, you know, assessing it later on. So that was really relieving. It gives us a lot more to work with. Just to give an example of the kind of feedback that we
get. I love the examples. If anyone else has any good examples of something they learned, that would be...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's interesting that you kind of had that experience where it's kind of like very much that open dialogue and like kind of almost bouncing ideas off of them kind of thing. Because I don't think in any of the competitions I've been a part of, and this was my fifth one, I've had that kind of experience in the design side of things. But I think, again, like I think a lot of it comes down to the context of our team and how we approach that. And I think that was a really good way to go about it. Because like at the end of the day, I think that was one of our main goals as a team this year, is to try to come away from this competition with as much as we possibly could and learn as much as we possibly could. So I'm really glad to hear you kind of went at it that way and like we're able to have that kind of an experience, because there are some design judges, I'm not going to name any names, that if you came to them kind of approach, they would slap their own faces and start rubbing their forehead and just tear you down and ask why you didn't just look this up on the internet first.
Wow. So good. But yeah, I guess you're right. It might have been a different experience had we come into it saying, look at this amazing design that we've come up with. This is why it's great. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, if we do a good job, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's probably easier to ask the questions you're not totally sure about when you come at it from the perspective of, we don't 100% know that this was the right move. We'd like some, you know, guidance on whether we're completely out to lunch here. Zach, do you have any good examples?
Oh, like we got some Yeah, nothing that was so much of like a kind of, I don't know, instructional piece of feedback as that maybe. But we did get some good feedback on, you know, we should do more work in understanding the effect of compliance on all our kinematics. And then like actually quantifying that. And, you know, there's just kind of an interesting comment the design judge made, which is that it's way more important to test it than it is to try and calculate it, just because, you know, you've got all sorts of sphericals and all that are going to do interesting things under load. So it's really important that we get some kind of empirical data to figure out how, well, you know, if there's a noticeable effect on kind of any of our suspension parameters under load.
Yeah, I would have to think there's a ton of tolerance stacking and that kind of stuff.
Well, you also have complicated things like, which isn't something we could necessarily test without like a five post, well, test rig, like structural damping that comes from all those different joints interacting. But like you said, like there's some things that like you just, it's such a complicated system, you're not going to be able to effectively like simulate it. And that's where like being able to actually use, say, like a pull down rig to find out what our camber compliance is in heave or in other kind of situations and allow us to better understand what our car is actually doing and allow us to update our simulations so they're more realistic to the real world. Because pretty much right now, all of them assume that everything's perfectly rigid, which definitely isn't the case. And I think compliance is definitely a way that the vehicle dynamics team on our team can really kind of take that next step towards understanding our car and improving our car. And I think one thing too, if I were to like, it's not something that's new to me, but I think it's something that like for everyone who's kind of coming into competition for the first time or even sometimes the second time to remember is like, they love to test you on the fundamentals. And sometimes like the questions they ask are very fundamental in nature, but aren't necessarily easy to answer. And a good example of that, without going into too much detail on like the answer, the technicals of it, for us was like, how does anti-squat or anti-dive affect mechanical grip? Like, regardless of situation, just like straight up, how does like anti-geometry affect mechanical grip? And that was probably one of the tougher questions that he asked out of all of them. But it's in essence a fairly fundamental kind of vehicle dynamics question.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of that's really, especially when they're really, once they've kind of determined that you actually know what you're talking about, then they tend to open up with the like real serious fundamentals questions. And those can be quite tough, especially if you're on 3 hours of sleep and, you know, like it's been a several days of a lot of work. So
yeah,
those are just the things you got to keep in mind.
I'm curious, do you
plus for next year? Oh no, go ahead, Trevor.
Yeah, I was curious. I was just going to ask, as an ECE, do you learn like a lot of this in the mech program? Like how much of what you're talking about in VD do you get from classes?
The only things that I can think of relevant to vehicle dynamics that we've learned in classes are vibrations, like a vibrations class talking about like natural frequencies, damping, stuff like that. But honestly, I think I had to learn that stuff well before I ended up taking that class. So
yeah. I think
everything I've learned in vehicle dynamics has come from the team and from other members or researching, or I don't even know, but vehicle dynamics is nothing really too pop very much in the
mechanical. It seems like quite specialized knowledge.
A lot of it is like there's elements of it that are just kind of you cover in like, you know, various mechanics courses, like, you know, instant centers and linkages and all that kind of stuff. But it's a pretty specialized application of that. So like, it's not like take, you know, it definitely helps to have taken some of the courses beforehand, but It just kind of works out that if you're someone who's putting a lot of time into vehicle dynamics, you've probably learned all that stuff on your own before you learned it through class anyway. And you know, a lot deeper in a much narrower field. I know for ECE, have you found like the class material translates over pretty easily, or is it more kind of just learning it yourself type stuff?
It's tough to say, to be honest. I found, if I'm honest, a lot of the stuff I'm learning in the ECE program at VUVIC is repeats of what I learned at BCIT. But it was like in a really condensed sort of on task format. Like you learn it as a matter of course because you're working with circuits and things like that. Definitely, yeah, there are a lot of concepts that carry over, but there's nothing to do. You know what I think is missing in a lot of the electrical programs is PCB design just troubleshooting electrical circuits. Like they definitely teach you all the theory, but just being able to sit in front of one and figure out where the problem is, like they don't really teach you that. Like it's all the fundamentals, right? So that would be where I say is the biggest gap. But definitely, like a lot of the theory translates over, like power electronics, AC DC drives, all that sort of stuff. Very similar sort of theory to the kind of stuff we deal with on the EV.
Yeah, I'm actually really say that echoes well with like mechanical engineering as well. As like there's a lot of stuff that we deal with in the club that like you don't get with the classes. The classes are very much theoretical, but you don't learn how to actually build things. You don't like get that hands-on experience with like making sure your tolerances are right so things fit together properly. You don't go through the troubleshooting of why your suspension broke again. But I think that's kind of the whole motivation behind this competition in the first place, was to start filling those gaps that are being left by schools as things kind of become more theoretical, as there's been advancements made within engineering and a lot of it's on the kind of theoretical end as we learn more and more about our world and our machines and how we use them and how we can use them. But like, yeah, the whole motivation is like industry found that there's a lot of students graduating without that practical experience. So they wanted to create a competition that would be able to like give those students that kind of experience so they could come out and be able to contribute sooner in the field. And I can absolutely say, like, from my experience, it's been such a help through all the co-ops I've done. Like, a lot of success that I've had and a lot of reasons I've either gotten those co-ops or done well at those co-ops has been because I've had the experience with this team.
And Charlie, your description of it is pretty much basically what I've heard from everyone else that's been down the same route as you. Usually it's and PCB design tends to take a bit for people to kind of get into because it's something that doesn't really get covered. So, you know, a lot of times the first couple of revs you do on your first PCB probably not stellar.
Yeah, you definitely learn it quickly as you're going along. Oh, this is like such a mess when you're looking at the end and you want to change something and it's like a hassle, or you know, you get crappy ass signals because you ran all these lines in parallel and you know. But it's all stuff that had you approached it just once in one class, theoretically from the top down, you'd probably avoid a lot of those mistakes, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And it's definitely one of those like practical knowledge type things. Like if you are employed to create products and stuff, nobody's going to be breadboarding stuff really anymore. Like PCB design is so cheap. PCB manufacture is so cheap. It's you order one. If it doesn't work, change some things, order another one. It's really where the development.
Yeah, you probably would have spent more buying a breadboard and components large enough to fit on the breadboard.
That's exactly right. You've got to redesign all the components anyway, because you've got like, you know, through hole ones and stuff. Yeah.
Like the time to put that stuff together as an engineer will cost the company more than it
would. Yeah.
Bring it in. So that's, I mean, I guess, so what's the moral of the story is join a club, get some practical experience.
Yes.
Maybe that's the moral, moral of the story.
Yeah.
That's definitely been my favorite thing about UVic so far. It's one of the things I was looking forward to. I would probably say that a close second is the campus itself. I really like, but I've barely spent any time on campus. So, you know.
Yeah, some bad timing on that one.
It is the beautiful Zoom backgrounds of campus.
I'm really hopeful that September is going to be back in person. It's looking decent. I think they sent out that email and they said, like, yes, we're going to try.
Yeah.
But that would be a bummer.
Yeah, well, I mean, so this, it might not be that much of a secret, but recruitment for the student clubs has definitely been down, is what I've been hearing from not just internally, but all the other clubs as well. So it'll be nice to go back in person, because I have to assume that that's part of the appeal, is that you actually get to interact with other humans. And yeah. If you're only interacting with those other humans through Zoom calls and you spend all of your class time in Zoom calls, it can kind of get you get Zoom fatigue pretty quick.
For sure. Yeah. Also just like being able to get people into the shop to work on things is, I think, going to be huge for member retention, because it's a lot easier to, for new members to actually kind of feel like they're doing something with all the time they're sinking into this. If it's, this thing didn't work and now it works, instead of, this thing in CAD is changed slightly and is now slightly more effective according to CAD or whatever.
Yeah, that brings it back to competition really well. I mean, from my perspective, the most important thing about competition has been it forces you to actually build the car, because there's a reason to actually build the car, and it takes a lot of work. So you kind of need a little bit of a push. And you don't really know, it's really easy to make a perfect design in CAD. But once it's actually on a thing and interacting with other things and getting hit by rocks and cones and all the other mess that goes on, that's really
when you're trying to manufacture it entirely with a handheld drill, which is how the frame jig's going.
Yeah. So there's a learning curve, and it's definitely, you get to, I understand why this doesn't make sense over this. And like, I understand why I should change this, because like, as it fits together, it doesn't make sense. Or even like simple stuff like, I designed this in a way that it's like actually impossible to assemble, because the bolt is supposed to be here and there's like a frame tube right there, and you actually can't fit any sort of tool on it to actually turn the bolt, which is kind of important for assembly. So there's a lot of like lessons learned from that are not necessarily, that you don't get in CAD, because it's impossible. It's pretty much impossible to learn those lessons in CAD without having like gone with your Allen key to try and put on a bolt and then gone, how do I do this?
Yeah.
And then you've got six extensions out and you're trying to put in the engine with like five extensions, because there's no straight hole to the engine mount. I'm not talking from experience, trust me.
Sounds like every experience.
I'm sure I believe you.
Doesn't sound like it at all.
I guess the other reason actually having new members like will be easier when things open up is like the first years don't know how to use SolidWorks, so that kind of makes it hard for them to want to do much, SolidWorks over the computer, right? Like, you can't really have someone sit down with someone and walk them through everything. So yeah, hopefully when things open up, we can get, more people more involved. But I don't know. Looks like it'll only be a few months now.
I think the car is a really powerful motivating factor. Like, being able to see it moving and at the one of our test days, or even just being able to see it at a club's day, is like, hey, this thing is actually cool. It's like a real mini race car. Like, I don't quite want to call it a real race car yet, but like the fact that it's actually something that's we build, we, and like it works and it actually like goes pretty fast. Like that's a lot more exciting than like seeing a video of it or like thinking about like, hey, cool, it's a cool CAD model, but like, what does it actually do? But, and also like the opportunities to drive it too for our members is also like, I think the reason why some people initially join the team, and some people, if that's their only motivation, those are the ones that maybe don't stick around as long, but like the ones who kind of like, I don't know, find out like how interesting and how challenging what we do actually is. I think some of those people are the ones that stick around. Like another point to competition, especially in person, I think it's also a good recruiting tool for those members who go. Because like even if they're members that will stick around for quite a while, I think as you, Zach, can maybe like talk about is like once you go to competition, you see what it's actually like. You see all these different cars and all these different ways people have approached the same problem that you've been going at. It's really exciting, and it really like kind of, I don't know, for me in my first year when I went, like it kind of inspired me to kind of dedicate more time to the team and like,
oh, for sure,
more reason and more like enthusiasm and excitement to like. Like the whole experience of it just really kind of, you know, I don't know. I was already pretty involved in the team. Like I really enjoyed the team, but that like, that was the final push that made me really want to like dedicate a lot of time. And probably the reason I eventually became a lead and now chief engineer is just the experiences that I've had going to competition.
Yeah, that was definitely my experience when I went in the first year, because it, you know, it kind of shifts from, oh, you know, here's like, you know, a cool project that, you know, the people have been working on it for a while, you know, have some ideas, which I guess are good. The car still rules, to, oh, you know, we're actually competing against a bunch of other people. There's like 17 different solutions to every single problem you've bumped into. And, you know, you also tend to see there's a lot of room for improvement in different stuff. And yeah, so by just talking to other teams, you get also, you know, they bring up all sorts of different things that you might not have considered or different processes. They have all the seminars as well, so you can kind of get a feel for like which area of the car you might want to get more involved in. So yeah, like I think in-person competition is going to be huge for just getting people, you know, more involved and, you know, actually enjoying their time on the team more.
And going back to Charlie's point about getting a lot of feedback from the judges, one of the things that can make a team a bit cynical about design is, and because in person it tends to be a little bit more an evaluation of the car and in your design practices, and not as much, hey, we want to help you figure out your design as much as possible, because a lot of times you've already talked to other teams, seen what they do, talked to them about how they solve design problems, and then you kind of get to that same point usually before you've actually gone to design, because you've talked to enough other teams and seen enough other cars that you kind of, well, you might not totally have like, here's what's possible, because they might not have thought of, well, they definitely haven't thought of everything. There's probably still some options that they haven't thought of, but you've definitely, it broadens the scope of, oh, I didn't realize like we could be doing all these other things. And it's also, I think it's kind of easy to, at least for someone competitive, to get kind of like down on like, oh, like all, you see a lot of the like little problems and get nitpicky, and it's so for me, I found it was really helpful to kind of like zoom out and go, oh, okay, like, you know, you get a more direct comparison where you're going, okay, we actually are good. Like the little nitpicks are the same problems that all of these other teams are having to face, because it's just the reality of the time constraints and the experience constraints.
Yeah. May also see some of the teams that don't really have those constraints just doing really cool stuff. Like, I remember seeing Stuttgart had aluminum rear brake rotors I remember that just kind of blew my mind for a few hours. But
well, I still remember when Two Grass, I think it was, told us that they had carbon fiber uprights because they were like, well, it was easier for us to make it than aluminum. And we're like, what? And what, you know, what version of reality is this true? In their version of reality, it turns out.
Yeah.
Aluminum brakes, like, wouldn't that be worse? Like,
they're lighter, is the main thing. It's unsprung weight, so like if you can shave weight at the rotor, and if you have your rotors mounted kind of to your hubs, that helps with suspension performance and all that. And as long as they can, you know, not melt, you know, they tend to still work as brakes then.
Yeah,
but it'd be there's some
maybe use for temperature control on that, because like
it'd be like single use.
Really hot.
I think they just make the car light enough that the brakes don't get hot.
That's one option. That's like somewhat ironic, where you can make the car lighter just because the car is light.
Yeah.
Well, it's also interesting, like last competition I was able to go to, which was 2019, looking at the top two teams in the combustion section being Stuttgart and Two Grats, and like they were two completely different approaches to making a car. But they're both like fast as thing. But that's part of the reason why the competition is so cool to go to, is because like the rules are fairly open-ended. So you can go a lot of different ways. Like Stuttgart has like a four-cylinder engine, and like it's still a very light car, but like it's a very different approach to Two Grads, who they have a single-cylinder engine, both like highly customized. And like they had four-wheel steering, I think, that year for the first time, at least the first time I had seen it since I started going to competition. They may have had it a long, long time ago, but like they had that going, and that like the way their car handled around that track was just unbelievable. Like it just took the corners so steadily, like both high speed and low speed. It was just incredible. And it was weird too, because like for the longest time Stuttgart was kind of untouchable, but like that last year, like Two Grats was arguably had the faster car. Actually, I think they did have the faster car, but Stuttgart still
won. I think they definitely did for endurance, because I remember for endurance they beat everyone and used less gas. Just, you know, it's like added insult to injury. But
did they use less gas or have a higher efficiency score? Because those are different things.
Yeah. Higher efficiency.
They do the efficiency score based on how fast you go. So if you drive really fast use lots of gas, you get a high efficiency score. If you drive really slow and don't burn that much gas, you might actually be like, you might as well have used more gas and gone faster.
Yeah.
Fair. I mean, it kind of makes sense. It keeps people from just straight up, I don't know, driving like your grandmother out on the racetrack for the sake of getting efficiency points. Like if you know you're not going to be able to challenge for a certain amount of speed, you can always like, you know, I don't know, lay off the pedal and just kind of coast at the end of all the straights and like just stay feel that way. But I think that's
that would be painful.
But it was still like to be the fastest team in endurance and get the top efficiency score is still pretty impressive.
Out the floor panel and get some Flintstones rolling power.
Well, I wish we were allowed to do that. That would have gotten us through endurance a couple of years.
Yeah.
One day
we'll actually finish endurance.
Danger to manifold scenarios.
I was just thinking about it, but it's not going to be too long before like there's no one on the team that's seen like our car finish endurance. Like,
yeah, I'm just thinking about that too.
Exactly. Like, but especially because these last two competitions have been online, like people haven't seen it finish endurance. But that was something that we did relatively regularly at one point.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's been two competitions of online and then two competitions of not finishing endurance. So
in what's supposedly a 4-year program.
Yeah. Is it though? No.
No.
I think the official schedule is in 4 years, like a 5-year program. So
yeah, technically, because of the co-ops, the official schedule is like 4.5, 5. It's not actually 4.
Yeah.
So 7's not that far off.
At night.
And I not decided to take the extra co-ops, I would have been graduating this spring, which would have made like a standard 5-year program, which was, I think, on schedule for when I was supposed to graduate type thing.
As much as I complain about the co-ops, I'm starting to see the value. Like, I even spoke to one of the guys in the job that I was just doing. And it's like, it makes such a difference when you've actually been on the job and had to face problems. And you know, it's a different atmosphere completely.
For sure, yeah. You can actually Google things instead of just staring at your test for 45 minutes.
Yeah, that's the thing. At the end of just a purely academic degree, you get really good at taking tests. But so it was with an unfamiliar problem put in front of you. Where do you go for that information? I'm going to take this opportunity to duck out. I've got another meeting. But thank you for having me, guys. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, sure Charlie.
Thanks, man.
Hey, ciao.
And if I'm honest,
siren from somewhere, I think.
Oh, was it Charlie or was it Nigel? No, Nigel's muted.
I think it was Charlie. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's probably not a terrible spot to end in general, but if you guys want to keep going, I don't mind. We can be here all day.
Yeah. No, I have no self-control when it comes to talking.
Oh, yeah, actually. This is something we could do an episode on, just Nigel's inability to end a meeting on time. Like, it was great because, you know, back in the day I was on VD and suspension and breaks, and, you know, VD meeting was an hour before suspension and breaks. I'd show up to the VD meeting and I'd still be like an hour late to suspension and breaks because suspension and breaks was an hour late because Nigel wouldn't get out of the office. And you see, we joined these two instant centers, and from this we can calculate this other. And then, meanwhile, Alex like pounding on the door.
I mean, if you think an hour late was bad, the leads meetings were notorious for being like 5-hour deals.
And yeah, those weren't my fault. To clarify for those of you at home who are listening and following along.
I will allow Nigel the freedom that was not his fault.
Mm-hmm. I have some suspicions of who that might have been then. But,
well, we'll leave that to
speculation.
Yeah, rumor and speculation.
I think it might have something to do with the guy made the 200 slide PowerPoint, but. I had kind of a funny moment the other day where I realized that somewhere in one of like the presentations that I keep handy for, you know, like introducing people to vehicle dynamics, there is a page about a yaw moment diagram, but it's labeled a yeet moment diagram. And I don't know if it's in one of like the competition packages or one of the new member packages. I haven't been able to find it, but I know it's out there.
I always, it's always funny to me when you're like, I'm 100% sure we proofread that. And like, I didn't see any spelling mistakes. And then like a year later, you go back to reference it for you're doing the redoing it. And then you're like, oh my God, how did the spell checker not catch all of this?
You can find some really rough sentences in a lot of those presentations if you go back through them. But
yeah, I'm actually sure.
Honestly, the
book is as coherent of English as it is.
Yeah, right.
Like you would think with that many pages, it would be a disaster.
Also, I've heard stories about the design judges, and like I don't know, they seem to be altered quite a bit. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was just, you know, a page or two of smack dab in the middle of the rules of just like incoherent kind of rambling on something or other. I don't know. Actually, that's kind of my strategy for a comp next year, is just hope that all the design judges are really out of it when it comes to design. They just don't notice too much if I like make up all my data.
You say that now, and that's bad jujus, which means you could very well get Claude Ruel. And that won't work.
Yeah, that's... The thing is, I know I'm going to get Claude at some point, and I know he's going to destroy me. And the problem is it hasn't happened yet, which means it's getting like increasingly high stakes.
Well, with this year, I could officially like let my breath out, because I've been holding it for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Ryan had to deal with him, though, but that's the year we went to design finals. But I'm sure that whole saga can be left for another podcast.
Yeah, that'll be the... I think we'll probably do like a campfire special where we... just have a nice vent.
Oh boy,
classic campfire vent.
Yeah, I think we should have a real campfire vent when COVID goes away.
Yeah, I definitely think we should do that.
Yeah, to burn stuff.
All right, well, I feel like that's probably a good spot to end things. If I'm
probably,
I just feel like I should, because I know you guys are gonna go. As if I let you guys go, you'll go.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thanks everyone for tuning in this one. As always, if you want to send in a request for something we can cover in the future, you can get a hold of us through Instagram. Amy will, I assume, respond to you very promptly, but Amy's not here to promise that, so I won't promise for her. Yeah. All right. Thanks, everyone.